Wednesday, February 8th, 2012. You're listening to the Brain Labor Report.
Listen up. We've got a war zone here today, right in our heartland. And across the USA, these multinational bastards don't use tanks and guns, it's true. But they've declared a war on us. Fight back, it's up to you. Oh, it's a war on the workers.
War on the workers.
The death of you and me, but we're not unarmed. Our weapon solidarity, Jim Beals and Karen Silkwood, the list goes on and on. With every year that passes, 60,000 more gone. Oh, it's a war on the workers.
War on the workers.
Oh, it's a war on the workers.
War on the workers.
Oh, it's a war on the workers. And it's time we started calling the shots. When they boost your protection. It's a war on the 8-hour day. It's a war on occupational health and safety. It's a war on social security. Now, thanks to WTO, GATT, NAFTA, MAI, the IMF, and the World Bank, it's a worldwide war. Oh, it's a war on the workers.
War on the workers.
It's time we started calling the shots. That's Ann Feeney, War on the Workers, and this is the Brain Labor Report. This is Wes Brain. I'm host of the show.
This is Jason Houck. I'm the engineer.
Coming to you on Wednesday, the 8th of February, 2012, and this is KSKQ, 89.5 FM. Coming out of Ashland, Oregon, you could be hearing this anywhere on the planet at www.kskq.com. org. Brain Labor Reports a weekly. It is every Wednesday. We talk about the issues of the day for ordinary working people. I'm telling you, there are lots of attacks on working people. The divisions in our communities are monstrous. We have challenges in front of us like we never have before. The rich are getting richer. The poor are getting poorer. And in fact, we see it every day on the streets and in the cities of every town in all our communities all across the country. Today's show's a special one. You know, soldiers are workers. Many of the people involved with the war effort in Iraq are workers. But I did say Iran, didn't I? Today, our show is going to be about Iran and the horrible The horrible future that war might bring us there. There's a lot of rattling going, saber rattling, they call it, going on. We're going to have Brenda Gould, my wife, today on the show here in the studio. We'll say hi to her now. Brenda.
Hello, everybody. I'll be here, and our daughter will be on the phone from Washington, D.C., talking to us about diplomacy, not war.
Well, that's a great thing to talk about. We got some work to do there. Brothers and sisters, we always start off the Brain Labor Report near the top of the hour-long show. We bring you the Workers' Independent News. 3 minutes of, this is cutting-edge news, news for working people. You don't see or hear this on mainstream media. But by gosh, we got great news coming out of Madison, Wisconsin. Here is for the 8th of February, 2012. Here's Workers' Independent News.
News. I'm Doug Cunningham. The Association of Flight Attendants says with Senate passage of the FAA reauthorization bill, collective bargaining rights were attacked by Republicans and Democrats alike. The union says corporate interests and right-wing ideologues used this vital piece of legislation to destroy collective bargaining affecting workers across the country. Inserted in the bill are measures making it much harder for workers to form and sustain unions. The union says 157 House Democrats and 15 Senate Democrats stood with workers in their votes on the FAA bill, but the rest of Congress approved the attack on collective bargaining. The next big vote in Congress for workers is the extension of federal unemployment benefits, which must be done by February 28th. And once again, anti-worker lawmakers are trying to insert punitive measures into the extension. The Center for Law and Social Policy says one such measure would deny jobless benefits to workers without a high school diploma or equivalent if they can't demonstrate they're enrolled in a credential program. That's kicking the most vulnerable workers while they're down, according to CLASP senior policy analyst Neil Ridley. He says while it's a good idea to motivate the workers to get the education they need to succeed, imposing this new requirement is punitive and misguided. According to a Washington Post ABC poll, 72% of Americans support raising taxes on millionaires, while 68% believe the tax code is rigged in favor of the wealthy. President Obama also leads GOP presidential contender Mitt Romney on the issue of who is trusted to handle tax policy by 52 to 42%. Obama also leads Romney in the poll on who is best to protect the middle class by a whopping 55 to 37% margin. The World Cup has been a lightning rod for workers seeking better salaries and benefits, and this year is no different as the workers building Brazil's stadium and renovating soccer fields are threatening to go on strike. While the country has already seen pockets of strikes by workers seeking unified salaries, benefits, and working conditions, the country could soon see a strike in all 12 host cities. The pressure is being put on construction companies who have been treating workers differently based on which venue they're working on. The union representing the workers says that must stop and everyone should be treated equally. The action could come as early as next month. Pacifica Radio says it's riveting. This is what democracy looks like. Wisconsin's Worker Uprising is a one-hour documentary from Madison-based Workers Independent News. Get your copy today at laborradio.org. This newscast was made possible in part through underwriting support from the hardworking men and women of the IBEW, the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers. You've been listening to WIND, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
And you're listening to the Brain Labor Report, again on Wednesday, the 8th of February, 2012. Welcome back. I did mention some saber-rattling going on. Brenda Gould is with us as my wife in the studio today, and Jason.
Good morning.
Good morning, Brenda. There is a little saber-rattling going on. First, I know we're going to be talking with Kate Gould, my stepdaughter. We've had Kate on the show before, and I've had you as a guest, too. We're going to be chatting with Kate, and to get there, why don't we just for a minute, Brenda, again, welcome. Hey, it's raining out there in Ashland.
Yes, it is, and our deep concerns here on this show, I want to bring us back to that, are the working people, actually the people of the world. And so that's that. Those are the stakes involved here that we're talking about today. Diplomacy, not war with Iran. We're going to have our daughter on the telephone from Washington, D.C. She's going to tell us about her work with the Friends Committee on National Legislation. Kate has been working there off and on for several years, and she's been over to the Middle East. She hasn't been to Iran, but she sure wanted to go. And Kate actually called us just at Christmas time and told us that Rebecca, our older oldest daughter, and Kate's sister was actually in Iran. So so we've got the Iranian connections here, and we're very concerned about the saber rattling.
So we'll be talking to Kate in just a couple of minutes. To bring that on, we've got a song. And our buddy Julius Marglin, he's gone now, passed away. But this song, I Don't Want to Be a Soldier. George Mann and Julius both sing it, I believe, on this version. And it's a great, great song. So at the end of the song, we'll be talking, we hope, with Kate Gould. But right now, listen to this one. I Don't Want to Be a Soldier.
I don't want to be a soldier. I don't want to kill and maim another mother's son or daughter. Imperial war is a dirty game. I don't want to be a soldier. Steal some other people's wealth, invade their homes and their nation. This is how I've always felt. I call upon the world's millions. No more war in our name. Stop this madness. Stop the killing. Stop the suffering and the pain. I don't want to be a soldier. Murder children in foreign lands. Bomb and terrorize all those families. So for peace, I'll take my stand. The suffering and the pain. So I don't want, to be a soldier. I don't want, to kill and maim another mother's son or daughter. George Bush's war is a dirty game. George Bush's war is a dirty game.
Welcome back to the Brain Labor Report, and I think we made connections. Kate Gould, can you hear us this morning?
Loud and clear. Hi, Wes.
Hi. Well, loud and clear. Kate, we have your mother, Brenda, my wife here in the studio, and I'm going to kind of back out of this a little bit, and Brenda said she would go ahead and put on the headset. Brenda, she would like to have a chat with her daughter today. We introduced it a little bit. The topic, stopping this dang war in Iran. So with that, Brenda, we got Kate on.
Thanks, you guys.
Hey, Kate, good to hear your voice.
Good to hear yours, Mom. Great to be on the Brain Labor Report. I'm so glad it's been revived.
Welcome back. Yes, you have been on this show for years. Good for you, Kate. Hey, Kate, what are you doing working with the Friends Committee on National Legislation in Washington, D.C., and how did you get there?
Well, preventing the next war, we hope it doesn't ever become the next war, but preventing war with Iran is a major priority for FCNL, the Friends Committee on National Legislation. So, and just for those who have never heard of FCNL before, we are the Quaker lobby in the public interest. We lobby on a host of different issues, foreign policy and domestic. I lobby on Iran and Israel-Palestine and other Middle East issues. We also work on ending the war in Afghanistan, on nuclear disarmament, on lots of different kinds of issues. But at the top of my plate lately has been preventing a war with Iran. So we've been doing a lot of work around that, a lot of work on the Hill. Yesterday, I lobbied with Colonel Wilkerson, the former Chief of Staff for Secretary of State Colin Powell, who actually played a key role, and he'll admit to this, of getting us into the war with Iraq. But now he's working very hard to prevent war with Iran, has also long been opposed to the war in Iraq and in favor of ending that war. Glad to see that U.S. troops have left. But he's also working on against torture and lots of other issues. So we were just on the Hill and also doing, we're working, both doing direct lobbying and also grassroots organizing across the country to get the message out to Congress and to the administration that we need diplomacy, not war with Iran.
Yes, diplomacy, not war with Iran. And I'm looking at the postcard that I'll ask you to tell us about in a moment. First, I would like to know, Kate, what is your title there at the Friends Committee on National Legislation?
Well, I'm actually the Legislative Associate on Middle East Policy here at FCNL.
Yes. And Kate, can you tell us in 1 minute how you ended up being the Legislative Associate? How did your career take you there?
Yeah, well, right after I graduated, I actually came to FCNL as a program assistant, formerly known as intern here. They have a fabulous internship program that I highly recommend that your listeners consider if they know young people who are interested in applying. We are actually accepting applications now. It's really a lot more than an internship. You have a full-time job for a year, lobbying Congress on various issues that FCNL works on. And I did that for the foreign policy team, lobbying against war with Iran and also to end the war in Afghanistan and on Israel-Palestine peace, and then also on ending the war in Iraq, of course. So I came there after doing some anti-war organizing on campus and studying international relations and political science in college. And then I went to FCNL as a program assistant on the foreign policy program. I was there actually for 2 years, and then I went to the Middle East to try to get some firsthand experience in the region of what the consequences are of U.S. policy toward the Middle East. I lived in the West Bank for 8 months, traveled extensively around the region, and volunteered and did some other work around Gaza and Israel, Lebanon, Jordan. And then I returned to the U.S. and worked for a colleague organization called the Just Foreign Policy, and I also interned for Senator Merkley, and then returned back to FCNL, which I call my second home. So it's been great, and I'm thrilled to be in this position and really getting to focus on Middle East issues.
Well, Kate, thank you for that history. I would like you to tell the listeners about the website for FCNL, and also I would like you to tell the listeners a little bit about your advocacy with Senator Merkley's office.
Sure. Well, you can find us at www.fcnl.org, and if you go to www.fcnl.org/Iran, you can find out all about the work we're doing to prevent war with Iran. And you can also sign up for our updates. We send out an e-news update and then also a legislative action message every week. We also have a number of different lists. If you're particularly interested in the environment or in cutting the Pentagon budget, then you can find relevant lists there. And then if you're interested in foreign policy and the work that I'm doing in Iran and the work that we're doing across the country on ending current wars and preventing new ones, then you can sign up for the World Without War list there. You can do it at fcnl.org/Iran or elsewhere on the website. But there's a lot of info there about lobbying your members of Congress, and that's what this is really all about. I mean, what we do is we try to get people across the country, and there are so many of us who are peace activists, but to try to get us to both peace activists and others to engage with Congress, to set up lobby visits and talk with congressional staff and members about issues that are important to you and issues that can bring about a more just world. So now about lobbying Senator Merkley's office, yes, we coordinated actually with Citizens for Peace and Justice and in large part
thanks
to your help, Mom, and Wes's help, so thank you.
Thank you!
So I know you all were very busy in just about 72 hours gathering signatures on these postcards that we have addressed to senators on preventing war with Iran, and then sent them to me, and then I delivered them to Senator Merkley in person and also talked with the staff. We had a great discussion, in-depth discussion, and I know he's very concerned, both from interning in his office and in all my interactions with him. I know that he's very concerned about what constituents, what Oregonians are saying.
Kate, this is Wes for a minute. I want to ask you about that. You know, I've signed cards before, and it's really nice to get the feedback. And so you tell us the story. You hand-delivered the cards, and tell us a little bit more about that day. And it was a luncheon, wasn't it, with Senator Merkley, please.
Well, yeah, so it's actually a coffee hour, and I would strongly encourage that whenever you all or your listeners are in D.C., it has to be sometime during when Congress is in session, because otherwise he's back in Oregon. But when Congress is in session, every week on Thursday mornings, he holds what's called Good Morning Oregon sessions.
Sounds good.
Yes, and they serve great coffee from Portland. They bring it, you know, because we don't have any good coffee on the East Coast. and then also tea from Portland, the Stash teas. And
we got some local Ashland coffee. We might get to him too sometime. We got some on the southern end of the state too. But yes, that's yeah.
Yeah,
exactly.
Kate, one of these days I bet you're going to be drinking coffee, but meantime, all right, so this sounds like a coffee for the people.
Exactly.
Yes, and so why is it important to lobby Senator Merkley? And first, by the way, I suspect we have listeners across the nation and perhaps across the world, around the world. Tell us a little bit about Senator Merkley and whatever other congressional people you'd like to speak about.
Senator Merkley is particularly important on this issue because he serves on the Senate Banking Committee, and the Senate Banking Committee has just passed another round of Iran sanctions inside the committee. They haven't gone to the Senate floor yet, and that's when everybody around the country is important and weighing in with their Senate offices, because every senator will have an opportunity to vote on this legislation, which we are very concerned will actually undermine any kind of, you know, the prospects for a diplomatic resolution of the conflict with Iran and heighten tensions and that could even pave the path for war. So in the context of all these sanctions, I mean, that this signal that Congress continues to give of more and more pressure on both Iran and the administration, whereas there's very little talk about a diplomatic resolution. So that's the case. You know, we all need to be talking to our senators or our representatives or if outside the United States, you know, and our elected officials, hopefully you have them wherever you are and can advocate for diplomacy, not war with Iran. But yes, there is a particular interest in reaching out to Senator Merkley because he's on the Banking Committee. And you know, what we are asking is whether or not people support these sanctions or not. And unfortunately, there's virtual unanimous support in Congress at the moment for a lot of these sanctions. But that it's all the more important to speak out on the floor in favor of diplomacy and against war with Iran. So I think, you know, and we had a good discussion with Senator Merkley about that and at this coffee hour, and people can definitely, any Oregonian can register for one of these coffee hours with Senator Merkley and get to speak to him, and I think it'd be great to bring up that issue. But everyone, you know, all Oregonians, wherever you are, you don't have to come to D.C. You can call the local Senator Merkley's office. You know, he has an office in Medford. He has one in Eugene and Salem and Portland and Bend. And so you can call wherever you are. You can call the office and you can reference, you know, maybe your postcard was one of the postcards that I delivered, and you can talk about that. Or maybe you haven't sent a postcard in, but you're also concerned about the threat of war with Iran, and you'd like to see Senator Merkley take to the floor just like he's done so courageously in ending the war in Afghanistan. I mean, he has been a real champion of that issue. So there's no reason that he can't also be a champion on this. I know that he wants to hear from Oregonians about their take on these different issues. And on this issue and, you know, and other issues that concern you. So it's definitely, it's a great time for political engagement.
Well, Kate, by the way, I'd like everybody across the nation in particular to know we're talking about Oregon's junior senator, Jeff Merkley. And he really does need to hear from us. Kate, this is a bit of a twist. I think you can handle it. I understand that we want diplomacy. And I read here in the Friends Committee literature that sanctions have been tried at least since 1979 continuously. We were allying ourselves with the Soviet Union back then, and we were putting the sanctions on Iran. And this continues, according to Admiral Mike Mullen. I'm reading his statement. However, I'm looking at yesterday's Mail Tribune, Tuesday, February 7th.
That's
looking at
Medford.
The headlines on the Nation World page. There might be a couple pages telling us about the nation and the world here. The headlines, U.S. imposes more sanctions on Iran, and the headlines below that, action targets Iran's central bank in hopes of preventing an attack from Israel. So one can read this article and read more of that line, and I'm thinking, boy, that's an odd way to do diplomacy. The only picture in this article is a picture of Israeli soldiers lying down, pretending to be wounded in a command drill, practicing for when they're going to be attacked. And so, that's going on in the media while Congress continues with their sanction bills, and the president continues that direction too. Please comment.
Yeah, it's very alarming for sure. And I know there is a lot of speculation in the media about how the sanctions, the ever-escalating sanctions on Iran are actually, that we've completely lost sight of the end goal, which is presumably to have a diplomatic breakthrough with Iran, to come to an agreement on that would guarantee transparency on Iran's nuclear program and resolve some other issues as well. So presumably that's the end goal, but then There is a lot of talk about sanctions in order to prevent, it's actually in order to prevent an Israeli attack on Iran. And so there's a lot of, there's certainly a lot of support out there, especially in Congress, for just more and more sanctions, even though, as you pointed out, that we've tried this for decades and it hasn't worked. In fact, it's made things far worse. It's brought us to the point where we're now dealing with. And what's really remarkable is that while sanctions have been pushed for decades with Iran, that diplomacy has not been tried, even under the Obama administration, which really was elected on this platform of partially, you know, on reaching out to our adversaries, and that you don't do diplomacy with your friends. So where it really counts is when you conduct diplomacy with your adversaries. But it's, you know, from all accounts, it looks like that policy has been just abandoned, that idea of reaching out and working out a negotiated solution with Iran has just been abandoned since about soon after Obama came into office in October 2009. There were definitely some great steps that were taken. There was a 45-minute meeting between high-level U.S. and Iranian officials in Geneva during a lunch break, actually, and when they were for the U.N. Security Council talks about Iran's nuclear program. And there was, you know, this was historic, the first time in 30 years that high-level U.S. and Iranian officials had this one-on-one dialogue. And so, I mean, how on earth would we resolve these kind of conflicts without real diplomacy? But that really just hasn't been tried.
Folks, you're listening to KSKQ 89.5 FM on Wednesday. You're listening to the Brain Labor Report. It's the 8th of February. We're having a discussion with Kate Gold this morning. And we are, this is Wes Brain, and
Brenda Gould.
Brenda's the mother. Kate is my stepdaughter. We're having a discussion. Hey, it's pretty heavy right now. We're talking about the threat of war, nuclear war. And I'm telling you, it's very scary, very dangerous. Kate, I have a question about that. As we're talking about, you're doing some great work in lobbying for the 99%ers, Kate, is where I'm coming with this question. And certainly, there are a lot of people in this country really have given up on Congress. If you look at the big picture, it's easy for me to understand how people throw their hands up in the air and they say, you know, they don't deserve our respect. They're run by corporations, for the most part, this Congress is, and people really don't feel like they have a voice. There's a movement, the occupation movement, and my question is, Kate, as a lobbyist for peace, someone who does meet with congressmen and the senators back there, what about this occupation movement? When a lot of people say, we're 99%ers and we don't want war, stop the war, when that's being heard, a drumbeat of that happening around the nation, it's a different way of lobbying, and I guess that's my question. It's not sending the card and talking to the congressman at coffee. Are they paying attention at all to this occupation movement? Do you? And this isn't a subjective question. Do you think it's being the news media? See, we can't trust them. They tell us that you know, they don't care. They don't even give us reports on what's happening. So my question is this: did we lose Kate?
No.
Kate, what about the occupation movement? Your thoughts on that and that drumbeat? What do you think?
Well, I think it's very inspiring to see how the Occupy movement has really upheld this issue about the influence that corporations have on our democracy, and has really highlighted that issue. I mean, just made it a spotlight, put it in the spotlight.
Sure.
In the American media. I mean, despite what you called, lousy coverage at some point, in many respects. But despite all that, I mean, it's still put the spotlight on the issue of money in politics.
It's changing the Kate, it's changing the dialogue, right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Right. So it is. So it's inspiring to just hear, to be in the midst of those kinds of discussions. And I think, I mean, just to be alive in this world at this time, and to be hearing, you know, from the Arab Awakening to the streets of, you know, New York and also and all across in Ashland and all across the country. I mean, it's very exciting, and I know we've it's spotlighted some issues that we've been working on for a long time, and it's great to see them finally getting attention. So that is exciting, and I hope that the there will be that same kind of energy built up around preventing a war with Iran, because of course that would be absolutely disastrous for the U.S. economy and for the global economy. I mean, it would certainly it would be very much against the interests of the 99%. And I know there's been a lot of talk in among the Occupy movements about those kinds of issues. So that's great to hear. And I think about your broader point about this disaffection with Congress. It's certainly it is understandable in so many ways. But I would say I think it is very important. I mean, that precisely because of that kind of disaffection, I mean, it's and because of these issues, because of how severe it is, this moment in our democracy that and in world affairs, that it really is more important than ever to engage with Congress, actually, because because this is in the spotlight now, the issue of money in politics and some broader issues about inequality in this country and around the world. And so this is a perfect moment to help build momentum by connecting what's going on in the street with your member who's a member of Congress who is here in D.C. or in your district or state. So, and I have, when I was program assistant here before, and I think actually I was on your show talking about this a few years ago, that the it actually the 99% did have an amazing, an astounding victory a few years ago in helping to prevent war with Iran under the Bush administration. That at that time there was actually a resolution in Congress calling for a blockade against Iran, which is an act of war, and it was the top priority of very well-funded special interest groups. And yet it was, it was the 99%, it was the anti-war movement, it was all kinds of different groups coming together from the left to the right to, nonpartisan organizations like us, but lots of different organizations, and we were very much involved with that, in defeating this resolution. It never came to a vote, and I know, congressional offices would tell us they were just flooded with mail about this, and we heard from top staffers, from leadership offices that they were hearing quite a lot about this. So I think, that shows what the power of really, of what congressional advocacy can do, and I think we can do it again. And I should say, we got 5 members of Congress to withdraw their names from that bill, and that is just, from everyone I've talked to in D.C., that's unprecedented. I mean, it may be the largest number of co-sponsors ever. and I was reminded of that with the SOPA and the and PIPA, the anti-online piracy stuff, so-called online piracy, anti-online piracy acts, and how as a result of Wikipedia shutting down and these different websites doing it, and all the public outcry and all the phone calls and the emails, that eventually members of Congress withdrew their co-sponsorship from that bill as well. So there's actually there are so many examples of things really and we hear, we're lucky to hear about them every day, of hearing about constituents who met with their members of Congress and how it's led to change. So, without going into all those issues, without going into all the stories, but I think we do have some great ones on our website about successes, that we've been able to see in Congress and in the administration as a response to, this kind of citizen lobbying work. That really, it's more important than ever to engage with Congress on these issues, and it doesn't have to be either. You can. Do your protests, but you can also be in your office and meeting with your representative, and there's so many different ways to do that. I think the civil rights movement is a great example of where there was the street work, the street protest, and then there was also people working on writing the Civil Rights Act,
yes,
writing these bills.
You're right, Kate, and of course civil rights is a great word to use here. We're talking about the civil rights of the people of the world, and we are trying to keep our We're trying to avoid having our soldiers and our drones sent over there to attack the people of other parts of the world. Kate, the activism, in a moment I'm going to ask you about how we can reclaim that other holiday in February. I'm talking about President's Day, which I've not enjoyed for years. President's Day
is pretty good for certain presidents. You just got to choose your president to celebrate.
And you know, Kate, when you were a little girl on all these patriotic holidays, you know, I mean, we put up our flag and we sang our patriotic songs. And and so whereas we've been playing, you know, ever since Bush came in, we've been playing these George and Julia songs about the
Hail to the Thief.
You know, we've been doing that. We really thought
Which are we also could, patriotic.
We thought we could put those away when some people such as yourself went to Obama's inauguration, and you know, we thought that was history. And so you heard the song from as you came on the air, we heard I Don't Want to Be a Soldier, and you know, bless his heart, Julian Margolin is gone. And that was maybe 5 years ago when we in Medford played that song all day long as a vigil for the soldiers, the people of the world who were dying. And so, Kate, before we get to that, let's have 2 minutes on something really wonky. This word that keeps coming up here, because Iran is one of these difficult subjects, partly not just because how sad it all is and complex, but actually there's that word sanction that we use. And I've learned, thanks to people such as yourself, I've learned to understand it a little bit in the context of Gaza. And I don't understand it very well because since we've been doing since 1979 at least big time sanctions on Iran. Can you talk to us a little bit about what that means?
Sure. Well, it's certainly confusing because sanctions are so varied and they differ from very different kinds of historical contexts, but they're a form of economic warfare. I mean, the really severe kinds of sanctions can be looked at as economic warfare. And these sanctions on Iran, and there's, you know, so many different kinds of sanctions, but the kinds of sanctions that we're talking about, like the sanctions against Iran's central bank, which would be like sanctioning the U.S. Federal Reserve, are really designed, and the proponents actually say this, they're designed to collapse the Iranian economy. And there was just an article today in the Chicago Tribune about how Reuters has discovered that actually these sanctions, there's many signals that these sanctions are actually disrupting food imports. I mean, they're presumably, this is about its nuclear program, but long ago these sanctions are not just restricted to Iran's nuclear program. They're actually preventing people from getting the food that they need. I mean, that's some of the studies that have come out certainly are pointing to that they're having that merchants in Iran, the traders in Iran, are having trouble buying rice, cooking oil, and other staples to just feed the 74 million people. You know, and this is just weeks before an election, so it's very troubling. And the kinds of sanctions that have been imposed on Iran, they're actually reminiscent of the path the U.S. went down with Iraq, that in advance of for so many years the U.S. had sanctions against Iraq, and these were multilateral sanctions done under U.N. Security Council. And UNICEF, the U.N.'s children fund, estimated that 500,000 children died, and that one of the factors that contributed to their deaths were these sanctions. So they can have effects that are actually as lethal as war, even in some of the most severe circumstances. So there's been studies. There's a Dr. Robert Pape from the University of Chicago did a study where he looking at all sanctions used since World War One, and found that in 95.7% of the cases that sanctions failed to achieve their objective, the stated objective of why those sanctions were imposed, and that the sanctions were three times more likely to end in military conflicts than success. So we've had, you know, the last times that we've sanctioned another country's central bank were in Libya, which of course led to war, and in Iraq, which led to war. So it's very alarming, and especially when you think about how with the 10 countries that have been under massive embargoes, the only one that actually resulted in democracy was South Africa, and but the others, they did not have any kind of democratic change. So with Iran, it's clearly the course of Iraq rather than the course of South Africa. These sanctions are opposed. In South Africa, the sanctions were supported by the opposition movement, you know, by Black South African movement leaders. But in Iran, they are opposed by Iran's opposition, Iran's pro-democracy movement, because this actually, the impact is being felt on them. They're the ones who can't buy rice and foodstuffs and can't have trouble feeding their families. So it's not the elites in power. It's these ordinary people that are suffering the most.
Okay, well, rice, is rice a staple in Iran?
It is. It is. Very important staple, and it's just, this report that came out from Reuters just shows how just these basic staples that are key to everyday survival are being harder, are so astronomically expensive in Iran that because of these sanctions that they are having a widespread effect on you know, of course, the most ordinary Iranians are suffering.
Wow. Wow. Kate, you mentioned you gave us a report back on this lobbying that you've been doing with Congress. And you mentioned that you're going to rev up that lobbying during the President Day recess. Please tell us about that.
Exactly. Well, we are continuing. I mean, we're always lobbying here, we'll be continuing to do some lobby visits on Iran, actually, with the former chief of staff for Colin Powell, Colonel Larry Wilkerson. But what we're doing with stepping up our efforts is President's Day weekend is actually a great opportunity. That whole week is a great opportunity to meet with Congress because members of Congress will be in district or in state. So that's a great time to reinforce the kind of lobbying efforts that we've done in D.C. by getting constituents to meet with their representatives in their district or in their state. So it's a great opportunity to, you know, actually right now it's still not too late to contact your congressional office and ask them to set up a lobby visit. It's great if you can bring a few friends with you too. You know, ideally you can have a group of four or five people who represent different parts of your community, and then to meet with and decide on one, you know, maybe two issues to talk about, and then to bring that concern to your congressional office and with a specific ask of what you want them to do about it. I think that's a really important part. A lot of people forget that, actually, that they have all these different concerns. Well, you know, it's great to boil it down and to have a specific request for your congressional office. So we're doing lobby visits across the country. We're actually, many are engaged in asking Congress to work in another issue, which is cutting the Pentagon budget. So there'll be a lot of visits going on. Actually, I haven't mentioned that my colleague, Catherine Phillipson, who just joined FCNL as the campaign's networking associate, will be traveling throughout the West Coast. She'll actually be in Eastern Oregon. She'll be in Washington State, and she'll be doing some lobby visits with people, organizing people around cutting the Pentagon budget. So there's definitely a lot going on, and a lot of information on our website, too, about setting up lobby visits at fcnl.org.
Wow, she's going to Eastern Oregon. Is she going to Bend?
I believe, yes, she is going to Bend. She's going to Eastern Washington and Eastern Oregon. Yeah, to focus on lobbying there. So it's great, you know, I think I mentioned this in the write-up that Senator Merkley seemed to be particularly impressed that there were postcards from, you know, other parts of Oregon, like Klamath, in addition to Ashland, like Klamath Falls or Grants Pass, that it's, you know, very important for these offices to see that there is support across the state or across the district for a particular position like preventing war with Iran. So I think, you know, yeah, there's a lot of efforts in ongoing and reaching out to Eastern Oregon and Eastern Washington and places where there may not usually be so much of this activity going on. But of course, there's a lot of interest in it in these issues out there as well.
Well, Kate, listen, I wanted to ask you then that in this interval we have before President's Day, to connect with a Friends Committee on National Legislation and to help with that lobbying effort, would you like more postcards, and where should those postcards be sent?
Yes, well, you are welcome. People are welcome to order postcards. They are free, though we do appreciate donations at fcnl.org/Iran, and there's a postcard order form there. I know we'll be doing a lot of those shipments soon. We just got another order. And the idea behind these postcards is to really use them as lobbying tools. And I know Wes mentioned earlier, you know, that he's signed a lot of these postcards. And usually these postcard campaigns, they send the postcards through the mail directly to the senator's office, which is great. But we find that it's even more effective to really compile those so we can show a big stack of those postcards and then bring them to the senator's office or ourselves. Or if others are interested in arranging for their own lobby visits, like during President's Day weekend, and bringing those postcards to the lobby visit. So to really use them as a tool to show that there's widespread constituent support in preventing war with Iran. So that's certainly one way you can get involved. We also have an action alert at fcnl.org/Iran, an online action alert, so you can just, with a few clicks, you can send a message to Congress, to your senator, asking that they speak out against war and in support of diplomacy with Iran. There's a very scary bill, actually, that we just found out it seems like it's going to be released in the next few days, and it's we've done actually an action alert about this before, and there's one on our website, but now it seems like it's going to be released in the next few days from Senator Graham, Senator Lieberman. They have a resolution to rule out containment toward Iran, and in the case of Iran pursuing some kind of nuclear weapons capability, and they, well, there are a lot of details to the bill, but really it's about saying that the military option should be spotlighted as the real and, you know, the most important option that should be looked at, and trying to rule out some other options in dealing with Iran around that military option. So very scary, and you can take action on that at our website.
Thank you, Kate. Thanks for that opportunity. I did get a glimpse of a YouTube video that allows a person to take, it's another place, also at the Friends website, but in any event, we can see those postcards at that website, and you can talk about you can see their importance. Kate, huge topic involved here is what mainstream calls the nuclear threat. This is why we're so scared of Iran. And I'm not trying to be funny here. I'm just thinking that Iran feels that Iran is a target of nuclear bombs. I think that's part of the problem. Would you talk to us about the nuclear situation?
Yes, that's definitely part of the problem. And fortunately, we have confirmed by U.S. intelligence, as stated by James Clapper, who's the Director of National Intelligence. He testified before Congress about a week ago, and he verified that, according to our best intelligence estimates, that Iran has not yet made a decision about whether to pursue a nuclear weapon or not. And, you know, and Panetta even said, Secretary of Defense Leon Panetta said just about a month ago or two that you know, when he was asked, is Iran pursuing a nuclear weapon, he said no. But what people are concerned about, what the U.S. is concerned about, is that Iran's pursuing nuclear weapons capability. So what that means that they would be pursuing this course of action where they could get to the technological level where, if they wanted to, in a short interval of time, that they could produce a nuclear weapon if it came to that. So that's what people are concerned about, and that's what, and we should be concerned. I mean, it is, as you know, we're against all nuclear weapons at SCNL. We work for a world completely free of nuclear weapons, and all nuclear weapons are a threat, and more nuclear weapons further undermine, you know, this global non-proliferation regime, and so that's certainly a concern, and what the point that we're making and the point that we hope that everyone on the show will be making to their members of Congress is that the single best and most effective way to prevent Iran, to prevent a nuclear-armed Iran, and also to prevent war is through diplomacy. And we have also a list on our website of all kinds of different U.S. and Israeli security officials who have warned against attacking Iran, and many of them make the case that if Iran were to be attacked by the U.S. or by Israel, then that would actually give it the best incentive imaginable to pursue a nuclear weapon. I mean, even if they're not, even perhaps, even though it's not on the horizon at this moment in their political landscape, that an attack would send the message to Iran that the only way to protect themselves would be to obtain a nuclear weapon and then use that as a deterrent, not use it on Israel or the U.S., as some have said very alarmingly and erroneously with no basis to back that up, but that they would actually use that as a deterrent to try to prevent a U.S. and or Israeli attack. So it's certainly a very alarming position, and none of us want to see a nuclear-armed Iran. None of us want to see more nuclear weapons in this world, but the single best way to prevent that from happening is through diplomacy, because if the U.S. gives a security guarantee and says, we will not bomb you if Iran agrees to full transparency on its nuclear program, along with all these different kinds of safeguards that Iran could impose, and if they, you know, were to adhere to very strict guidelines on, like, the additional protocol and other kinds of additions to its commitments under the Non-Proliferation Treaty, then, you know, we could be assured that there would be, that Iran would not be able to obtain a nuclear weapon, and that, and more importantly, I mean, or just as importantly, that the other regional issues could be resolved as well, and that just has to come about through diplomacy. So, and actually, Iran offered many of those things. They offered full transparency on its nuclear program. They offered to arm Hezbollah and a number of different issues in 2003, but the U.S. rejected it. So it just shows, I mean, these things actually are possible.
Kate, I hate to cut you off. I did hear that what we need to do is lobby for the diplomacy, pick up that offer perhaps that was made to us in 2003, get our Congress and President to go for it. Thank you, Kate.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Mom. Thank you, everybody.
You're so welcome. We're going out with a song right now, also from our friends George Mann and Julius Margolin. Julius, I think, is going to sing this song. It's from Hail to the Thieves, Volume 3. And the song is called If You're So Hot for War. So this is an album about taking our country back. This came out of the Bush years, and we're going to use it now.
You're so hot for war, why don't you enlist? You don't mind sending others, that always gets me pissed. Don't tell me about war, I served when I was young. I've seen blood and death galore when the shooting's done. I've seen families suffer when those they love have died, while those who send them off to war always run and hide. So if you're so hot for war, why don't you enlist? You don't mind sending others, that always gets me pissed. You tell me you're too old and that you're not too well. You always have a new excuse to send other kids to hell.
It's our young who do the fighting and the dying too. When the old men send them off to war, this is sadly true.
So if you're so hot for war, why don't you enlist? You don't mind sending others. That always gets me pissed.
A long, long time ago, a young man ran away. Who knew this AWOL pilot would rule the world someday? And now he sends our kids to war to shoot and kill and die. And now the whole world hates us, and he has no clue why.
So if you're so hot for war, Bush, why don't you enlist?